We're still studying in the 24th chapter of Ezekiel. Last time we'd gotten through the 14th verse, and so we'll be beginning with the 15th verse. This second part of the chapter has to do with a second sign given in this chapter. The first sign had to do with the cauldron that had the seething flesh inside of it, which was symbolic of the destruction of the city of Jerusalem and its people. And this second sign then shows that not only is that going to happen, but they're not going to be given the privilege of mourning and grieving over this destruction of the city and its people. And Ezekiel himself now is used as a sign to the people to bring this message across. Up to now, he had been giving signs and acting out signs, but now he's going to actually experience a terrible event in his life that's going to actually be a sign to the people. So, beginning the 15th verse, also the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, behold, I take away from thee the desire of thine eyes with a stroke. Yet neither shalt thou mourn nor weep, neither shall thy tears run down. Now, he's talking about the fact that his wife is going to die. Ezekiel is going to have his wife taken away from him. He says, I take away from thee the desire of thine eyes with a stroke. We learn several things from this. One is that Ezekiel was a man, not only who was a prophet, but he was married. So that the lesson is taught to us that God does not forbid his ministers, his servants, to be married men. And those who would forbid to marry because they consider it to be somehow a service to God to do so are going against the teachings of the Bible, all the teachings of the Bible, even the teaching given by the Apostle Paul, who was not a married man. And so Ezekiel was a married man. Not only that, but he was a happily married man, because his wife is described here as the desire of thine eyes. And of course, this is the way it should be in marriage. And we are to be so happily united with our marriage partner until this marriage partner is the desire of our eyes. That is, we do not look to any other for desire. We do not seek after desire by feasting our eyes upon others, but we let our marriage companion then be the desire of our eyes. And as the Apostle Paul says in 1 Corinthians 7, verse 2, nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, let every woman have her own husband. So this is the way marriage is supposed to be, and it's one of the effects of marriage that one is the desire of the other. He says, I'm going to take away from thee the desire of thine eyes with a stroke. That is, it seemed to be that her death was going to be rather sudden. It was going to be something that would be very soon, and there would be no way that Ezekiel could change this event. But he says, yet neither shalt thou mourn nor weep, neither shalt thy tears run down. Now it is appropriate for us to have a certain amount of mourning and weeping for the loss of a loved one, especially a loved one so dear and so close as a wife. And the tears that we shed on that occasion are appropriate tears. But here, so that Ezekiel can be a sign to the people that they're not going to be able to mourn and grieve over this destruction of Jerusalem, he is not allowed this privilege. He's not allowed this human expression of mourning, weeping, and having the tears to run down at the loss of his wife. And so he says in verse 17, forbear to cry, make no mourning for the dead. Bind the tire of thine head upon thee, and put on thy shoes upon thy feet, and cover not thy lips, and eat not the bread of men. So Ezekiel is instructed in the 17th verse not to go about the usual process of mourning. He says, make no mourning for the dead. Forbear to cry. He wouldn't be allowed to cry. He wouldn't be allowed to show any outward signs of grief. He was to bind the tire of thine head upon thee. That means to put the turban upon his head. He was to put his shoes upon his feet. He was not to go without shoes, as was the custom at this time, in a time of mourning and grieving. He was not to cover his lips, that is, he couldn't put a veil over his face, which was also another outward sign of mourning. And he says, eat not the bread of men. And this is interpreted to mean that those who would bring food in at a time of grieving, like when a funeral is impending, and we even have that custom today, he was not to eat the bread of men. He was not to partake of this food. He was to go ahead and go about his usual duties and activities, and he was to provide his own bread. Verse 18, so I spake unto the people in the morning, and at even my wife died, and I did in the morning as I was commanded. So it seems that this message came to Ezekiel at a time so that he gave the message to the people in the morning. He told them what was going to happen. He told them about the sign. That evening his wife died, and then the next morning, after the death of his wife, he did as he was commanded. That is, he didn't show any outward signs of mourning. He didn't make any cry. He made no mourning for the dead. Put his turban on his head. Put his shoes on. No veil on his face. And he did not eat the bread of men. So Ezekiel now is used as a sign. And we can see how that this could have been a terrific task for this prophet. Here he was a man just like any other man. He had deep feelings. He had such deep feelings that he made mourning to God just over the news that Jerusalem was going to be destroyed. But nevertheless, he was not given the privilege. He was not given the opportunity to mourn the death of his own wife, the delight of his and desire of his eyes, because this was to be a sign to the rest of the nation. And we see that Ezekiel did carry this out, even though it must have been a very grievous task for him to do. So in verse 19, and the people said unto me, wilt thou not tell us what these things are to us, that thou doest so? And this got the right kind of response from the people. They asked the question, what are these things to us? Why do you have to do like this? Why do you have to act this way? To give any kind of a message to us. What does this mean to us anyway? What is the meaning of this? And anytime you can get people to asking some honest questions, they really wanting answers, then you're in a position to be able to teach them something. And that's the case here with Ezekiel. He was now able to teach this people something about what this sign meant. And so in verse 20, then I answered them, the word of the Lord came unto me saying, verse 21, speak unto the house of Israel, thus saith the Lord God, behold, I will profane my sanctuary, the excellency of your strength, the desire of your eyes, and that which your soul pitieth, and your sons and your daughters, whom you have left, shall fall by the sword. Now Ezekiel explains to them that this is going to affect them in two ways. The first way is that God is going to profane his sanctuary. That is, the temple is going to be destroyed. There is no longer going to be a temple during this time of captivity. There's no longer going to be a holy place and a most holy place. There's no longer going to be the service of the priests there. There no longer will be the altar and all or the other articles of the temple that were used in worship are no longer going to exist. I will profane my sanctuary. God was going to have these Chaldean soldiers, these men who knew nothing about the true and living God, these men who had no appreciation at all for the worship that this people should have been carrying out to the true and living God, they're going to be trotting down the temple. They're going to be profaning it. They're going to be looting it. They're going to be taking the precious things out and using them for their own advantage. And so he says, I profane my sanctuary. Now, what did this mean to this people? This sanctuary was the thing that had been raised all their lives to have a high respect and regard for. And so he says, the excellency of your strength. This was the one true source of strength that they had. Even though they might have turned to idolatry, even though they might have mocked at the real God, even though they might have failed to have rendered the kind of worship that he wanted them to have, still this sanctuary was the excellency of their strength. When really everything was down, they could always come to the sanctuary, and there they could have the true strength of God to lean upon. Furthermore, he says, it's the desire of your eyes. This was a good thing to look upon, pleasant to look upon. It gave them a sense of relief, a sense of security, just to be able to know that it was there and to be able to see it. The very physical presence of it was a comfort to them. But it's going to be taken away, this desire of your eyes, and that which your soul pitieth. Now this phrase, your soul pitieth, means that which your heart has a pride in, that which your mind has a deep feeling for. And of course, all their lives they've been raised to think very highly of the temple and the elements that went along with the temple. And their mind had a deep-seated feeling for it. And now it's going to be taken away. There's going to be a void left here. And even though they had this great emotional feeling and attitude toward the temple, it was going to cease to be. He was going to have the sanctuary profaned. So that was one of the great things now that this sign meant to them. The second is, and your sons and your daughters whom you have left shall fall by the sword. That is, their kinfolks that he refers to as sons and daughters, those that are left over there in Jerusalem, they're going to fall by the sword. They may escape the famine. They may escape the pestilence that the siege of the city is going to bring about. But even then, they still have to get by the fact that the sword is going to be waiting for them, and they're going to fall by the sword. And so, just as Ezekiel had lost a very dear and precious possession, his wife, the thing that is referred to here as the desire of his eyes, was taken away from him with a stroke. Even so, all of these elements in Jerusalem, the temple, and their kinfolks, which are referred to as the sons and the daughters, are going to be taken away from them. The sanctuary is going to be profaned, and the sons and the daughters are going to fall by the sword. So you can see then how that this has a very definite significance to the people who see this sign. It has a very great meaning to them, a deep meaning. And so it's not just some vain, meaningless thing that Ezekiel is doing, going through this ordeal of having to have his wife die and not be able to mourn her death. This is a sign to the people that the same thing is going to happen to them regarding the temple and Jerusalem, and they won't be able to mourn this. And he explains this in more detail in verse 22 and 23. And you shall do as I have done. That is, you're not going to be able to go through the mourning and the grief that ordinarily would accompany such an event as this. And there is some discussion now among Bible scholars as to the reason why. Why could they not mourn and grieve over this destruction of Jerusalem and the loss of their relatives? Well, some say that it's because the event was so great that they would be so dumbfounded that they couldn't mourn and grieve about it. But it is more than likely because, and that seems to be in the context here, because it's the will of God for this to happen. This people had been so wicked, they had so brought this on themselves. It was such an appropriate judgment to be brought upon them because of their own ways and sins that since it was a righteous thing with God for it to happen, it would not be appropriate for them to mourn about it. This was the will of God for this city to be destroyed like this and for this thing to happen to these people. And so it would not be the appropriate thing to mourn and grieve over something that God was so willing to have brought about. And so he says, and you shall do as I have done. You shall not cover your lips, nor eat the bread of men. That is, they could not go through this mourning and grieving. And your tires shall be upon your heads. That is, go ahead and put the turban on their head. Your shoes upon your feet. You shall not mourn nor weep, but ye shall pine away for your iniquities and mourn one toward another. Here seems to be another clue as to why they weren't going to mourn over the destruction of Jerusalem. And he said, because he says, you shall pine away for your iniquities and mourn one toward another. What God wanted them to mourn for was not the destruction and the punishment and the vengeance that he brought upon this city because of its sins. He wanted them to mourn because of their sins, because of their iniquities. Not because of an act of God were they to mourn? They were to mourn because of their own actions, because of their sins. And true it is, before we can ever get close to God, we must have a true sense of mourning and grief because of the sins that we have, sins that we have committed. So you shall pine away for your iniquities and mourn one toward another. Verse 24, thus Ezekiel is unto you a sign. According to all that he hath done, shall ye do. And when this cometh, you shall know that I am the Lord God. So Ezekiel is a sign. Ezekiel is showing them what's going to happen. And then when it does happen, they'll know that Ezekiel was a true prophet. They'll know that it was the Lord God that was giving this message to Ezekiel. They'll know that this comes from the true and living God. There be no question about it, because one of the ways we are to know that God is real, that we are to know that the Bible is true, is simply by seeing that His prophecies have been fulfilled. When we can read a specific detail about an event that's given years before it happens, and then it comes to about just precisely as that prophecy said it would, then that's proof to us that this is the true and living God. It's no accident. It's not somebody's vain imagination, but this is God talking. And so he tells them that here. He says, when this cometh, you shall know that I am the Lord God. That would give them even more credence toward the things that Ezekiel was saying. They'd pay more attention. They'd give more heed. And they'd have a deeper belief in these prophecies. Verse 25, also thou son of man, shall it not be in the day when I take from them their strength, the joy of their glory, the desire of their eyes, and that whereupon they set their minds, their sons and their daughters. And in this verse, he is just simply referring again to this great and tragic destruction of the city of Jerusalem. This is the time when he's going to take away their strength, the joy of their glory, the desire of their eyes, which is going to be the sanctuary. And this is the time whenever that whereupon they set their minds, their sons and their daughters are going to be taken away from them also. Verse 26, that he that escapeth in that day shall come unto thee to cause thee to hear it with thine ears. Now, there's going to be a person that escapes. There's going to be a messenger who escapes from this destruction. And he is going to make his way over to Babylon, to the land of the Chaldeans. And he's going to talk to Ezekiel and tell it to Ezekiel with his own mouth so that Ezekiel can hear it from the direct eyewitness account of this person. Now we read about this happening in Ezekiel 33:21. And let's turn and read that verse. And it came to pass, in the 12th year of our captivity, in the 10th month, in the 5th day of the month, that one that had escaped out of Jerusalem came unto me, saying, the city is smitten. Now notice the time that this person came, the time that this messenger came. It was really about a year and 5 months after the city had been destroyed. So it was really about 3 years after Ezekiel is giving this prophecy, that this person came, but the city had been destroyed about a year and 5 months before the person made it over there. So, no doubt Ezekiel had heard the news of the destruction of the city. He knew about it. It wasn't something that was announced to him for the first time at that particular time, but it was the first time he'd had an eyewitness account. The first time he'd seen somebody who had been there, who had experienced it, who had seen it, and who could come and say, yes, I saw it. This is what happened. Now, the interesting thing is that so far as any more prophecies go, the Lord said nothing more to Ezekiel at this time about Israel or Jerusalem. He now begins to prophesy about the nations round about, and he continues to do this till he gets to that 33rd chapter of Ezekiel. But after this eyewitness comes, this refugee who has escaped this great destruction, after he comes and tells them what has happened, then Ezekiel is no more dumb. That is, Ezekiel now gives more prophecies about God's people, more prophecies about Israel, and the fact that they're going to be allowed to eventually come back to Jerusalem and to rebuild. But he'll be silent so far as prophecies go regarding them for the next 3 years until he hears from this eyewitness. So during this time of his silence regarding Jerusalem and its people, regarding Israel, we have the siege beginning, we have the fall of the city, and then we have that year and 5 month wait until this eyewitness comes to Ezekiel and tells him what happened, that he actually experienced and saw this. So he says in verse 27, "In that day shall thy mouth be opened to him which is escaped, and thou shalt speak, and be no more dumb. And thou shalt be a sign unto them, and they shall know that I am the Lord." So in that day, Ezekiel was going to get to speak again about his people. This time he'd be able to say some more pleasant things. This time he wouldn't have to talk about a destruction. This time he wouldn't have to talk about the vengeance of God that had already been carried out, that had already been accomplished. Now he could talk about the more pleasant things of the mercy that God was going to have on his people, of the fact that they could go back and restore themselves, of the fact that they would still be the faithful people of God. So now Ezekiel was a sign unto them. He'd been talking about signs up until this time, but now he was a sign. And then he says, "And they shall know that I am the Lord." After this terrible destruction of Jerusalem, after this defiling of the sanctuary, after this killing of their kinfolk, the sons and the daughters, by the sword, and this one straggler who did escape came and gave them the message, this then would be the great lesson that God wanted his people to learn, that they should know that he was the Lord. There is no other God. There is no other true and living God. Only this one God. And so they would be a one God people. They would not allow idolatry or any thought of another power or another spiritual being or another spiritual realm ever enter into their minds, because there was only the one God. They should know that I am the Lord. This would be the lesson that they would be taught and have to learn. We're going to close at that point. Next time, this is NC Crouch saying goodbye, friends.